Coach P's perspective.
Serve God, work hard, family coaching, play my part. Faith is something that I use every day, game changing moves. Sit back, relax, and listen. Inspiration is my mission. Twitch, got your back, Coach 96. We do got your back. PCO be in my brain, CSL is in my veins. Ain't no stopping or no blocking. Heaven's where I aim. In order to succeed, we cannot be lazy. Repping Jesus all the time, and yeah, we're going crazy.
Hey fam and friends, hey, welcome to Coach P's Perspective, where coaching, inspiration, and faith collide. This is your host, Coach Chad Parks, and thank you for joining me today. I'm a college All-American wrestler, coach, and the author of the best-selling book, Game Changing Moves. This background has allowed me to train elite athletes, coaches, and high performers from all walks of life. So if you need a pick-me-up, a kick in the pants, or a coach in your corner, I got you right here on Coach P's Perspective. Let's go. This episode of Coach P's Perspective is brought to you by Manscaped, the world champion in men's grooming, the best in men's grooming. For me, I've always believed as an athlete and as a coach, if you look good, you feel good, you're going to perform good. So I like to turn to Manscaped products. I use their shampoo, body wash, deodorant, lip balm, cologne. You name it, they pretty much have it, right? World-class trimmers. And one of the things I love about Manscaped is this. Whenever we're looking at their grooming products, they are paraben-free, cruelty-free, dye-free. If I'm going to put it on my body, I want to make sure it's healthy and I want to make sure I smell good, right? So if you or someone you know wants to stay fresh, smell fresh, you want to walk out there with confidence, make sure that you go to manscaped.com, check out their products. And you can get a 20% discount right now using the code COACHP20. That is COACHP20. The world champions, the best in men's grooming, Manscaped. All right, hey, welcome to another episode of Coach P's Perspective. I am pumped and I'm honored. I have Lieutenant Colonel Wes Wilson with us today. And so he is a husband, dad, special forces, highly decorated leader in the military. And we're going to talk about that a little bit more later. And then a cool little backstory real fast is, you know, Wes went to Shawnee Heights High School. That's where my wife graduated from. And I believe maybe Wes and my wife's sister are around the same age. And it's also where I'm the head high school wrestling coach. So Wes, man, thank you for being on.
It's an honor to be on. Thanks for the invite.
Yeah, you bet.
I've been listening to your episodes for a few days now. Learning lots. It's great. I think what you're doing for your sport and for the community, for your wrestlers and the other your peers, all the other coaches, it's fantastic bringing everything forward.
Yes, sir. Well, thank you. I appreciate it. So, well, let's just start here so people can learn your background. Tell us about, you know, I mentioned Shawnee Heights, but tell us about where you grew up. And we have a lot of athletes and coaches that listen. So maybe some of the sports that you played growing up as well.
Yeah. I grew up out in the country, south of Topeka in Wakarusa. So like 93rd and Barrington, probably familiar with the area out there. Fourth generation Barrington Buffalo. So my great grandpa, my grandpa graduated from Barrington High School.
Oh, wow.
And my mom went to Barrington Elementary and I went to Barrington. So second generation T-Bird. All over my mom's side of the family, both sides, Shawnee Heights, so deep, deep, deep roots in the community. And, you know, I love getting back there whenever I can, not too far away from home now. For, you know, got lucky with the military being close by, but tremendous area. There's no place like home. Great place to raise children out there. In terms of sports, yeah, I played football, basketball, and baseball all growing up, you know, a couple seasons of soccer. Baseball is probably my primary sport. You know, football is close. And then being 5'10", you know, there wasn't a lot of future in basketball. You know, great programs out there, Shawnee Heights, and played all the way through. Did play football at Baker University my first 2 years. And then 9/11 happened during my sophomore year. And I was like, well, you know, I'm not going to go to the NFL, but I probably will end up going to combat because I was doing ROTC through the University of Kansas. So I stopped playing football. But another side story, and this might be a lead in talking about something else, but I was planning on going to West Point and I had been accepted as going into my senior year, like September 15th, my senior year, I got the acceptance letter. Was all set, passed the PT test, the physical training test, you know, academically good to go and resume. And then I did not pass health physically wise, even though being a, you know, three sport athlete, I had asthma as a kid, and, you know, looking back on it, it's probably more allergy induced asthma, like during harvest season, a lot of dust and pollen and whatnot in the air, but I couldn't pass that breathing test. And so they rescinded the acceptance in December of my senior year. And I was kind of scrambling. I went to Coach Crossan, who you know well, and I was like, "Hey coach, anyone interested in me for football or anything?" He's like, "Yeah," I told him all, you know, "you're going to West Point, you weren't interested." I was like, "Oh, well, the next one that says anything, let me know," because that fell through. I had a great time at Baker. Went with another Shiny Heights guy, Mark Foland, was roommate there, and he had a great career at Baker. But yeah, that was a curveball that I ended up playing football in college, but it's a great experience.
Yeah, and Coach Crossan was my assistant for a number of years and just retired last year, and he's a great football coach as well. Still coaching at Washburn University, so yeah, that's very cool. I'm glad you got to go, you know, got to go play football this couple of years. West Point is extremely difficult to get into, so that speaks highly of your academics and character and those type of things. Yeah, so let's use that to lead right in. You know, where did the interest in the military come from? You know, did you come from a military family? Do you have other family members? Where did all that come from?
Yeah, no military in my immediate family. You know, I had a couple of grandpas that one served in World War II and the other one in the Navy in Korea timeframe, but no career military folks. I think my interest probably sparked in high school. You know, had a Spanish teacher, Mr. Scollin, and Coach Buck's dad was on the Bataan Death March.
Yeah.
And I think he retired as a general. You know, just learning about all the stuff and hit lit with Mr. Riney and Mr. Schultz. You know, I think our military leaders end up shaping the trajectory of our nation and our society and our culture, and that it was important. You know, I guess going into college, I hit on all the stuff, but I didn't accept Christ until I was April 8th, 2000. So late spring, my senior year. And, but in terms of wanting to go to West Point, you know, prior to that, or going to the military, you know, I didn't want to burden my folks with college, and I didn't have the money, you know, to pay for my college. So, that was part of it. You know, obviously service to the nation. I had wanted to go in as a chaplain, and then 9/11 kind of changed my trajectory on that. I was a religion and sociology undergrad. I was only going to do religion, but ROTC, I guess maybe with separation of church and state, they don't let you just do your undergrad in religion. And they kind of recruit chaplains straight out of seminary. So, but not at the undergraduate level. So I just added sociology as like a second. Yeah, but then after 9/11 happened, I was like, you know, if our country's going to be at war, I got to be there at the front. You know, I got to do more than just, you know, serve. And I never really thought I would do 20 years. You know, I thought I'd do my commitment, or, you know, stay until the war was over or whatever. And then it drug on and on and on. And so I was able to get a lot of rotations over there. But it's, you know, kind of like, if you're going to do something, do it all out. And I fortunately assessed as an infantry officer, and then went special forces as a captain, because you can't go straight in as a second lieutenant into special forces. But you know, if I'm going to be in the Army, I want to be a soldier. I didn't want to be, you know, second, third echelon. I want to be right at the front doing what you think of when you think of the Army.
Yeah. It's, you know, you mentioned 9/11. And I think most of us, you know, that were teenagers to adults, you know, I can remember. I mean, I still remember getting up to get ready for school that morning and like seeing it on TV, and like for a minute, like, is this a movie? Like, what is going on? You know, it felt so surreal. And then I remember going to my wrestling team's workout, and it was in the preseason for us. You know, we weren't competing yet. And I remember going in to lift weights, and one of the athletes just being like, and this wasn't the guy who was necessarily a Christ follower at the time. And he just said, "Hey, you know, can we pray?" He's like, "You know, Chad, would you pray for us?" And so like, all right. So remember, we prayed, and then we had a great workout. And like, that was one of the first times it truly hit me as an athlete. Like, man, whenever you are focused in practice or working out or whatever, the rest of the world disappears for a little bit. So for at least that hour, we weren't thinking about it. And then after that hour, then we were right back to thinking about it again. That same guy I've actually had on the podcast, and he's Special Forces in the Air Force. And
oh, I listened to that episode. I listened to that.
So Jordan Nichols, buddy Jordan, and who's a phenomenal wrestler, but he ended up going and being a college coach and then going to the military, you know, in the Special Forces. But I think that day was a day that kind of started to spark that or planted that seed in his mind as well. I think I want to go serve because of this, you know, which is honorable. And it's pretty cool that this has become a full life career for him as well. So let's just kind of go there. You know, tell me about your military career. I mean, how that got started. Why did you choose the Army to begin with?
You know, I think as a Kansan, Big Red One is something everyone's aware of and thinks about and is proud of, having the Big Red One in our state. My other grandpa was in the Navy and he didn't enjoy that experience, so kind of shied away from that. Air Force was something I was interested in a little bit, but I think just the way God made me, I was an Army guy on the ground is where I'm comfortable. In terms of, you know, the trajectory and path, I'll tell you something I learned at a youth group meeting when I was a junior in high school, and I was not a believer yet, but the youth pastor told me about, you know, life is like a sine wave, you know, just steady flat. There's highs and lows. And I think when you factor in God, and I forget all my, you know, trigonometry stuff from back in high school, I haven't had to use it, but if you do a factor plus one, then it's kind of a rise over run. It slopes up. And so, you know, the next low is not as low as the previous one, and the next high is a little bit higher. And so that was something that resonated with me. And then, you know, I'll get into some highs and lows in the Army. So high, you know, assessed well as a cadet coming out, got my number one branch choice and everything. But as an infantry officer, you're expected to be Ranger qualified before you get to your unit. And I went to Ranger school and I couldn't get a go. I could not pass patrols. I appeared well. I didn't have a lot of, you know, negative spot reports. Like, I just couldn't get a go. And had I gone to a light infantry unit like the 82nd Airborne or 101st Air Assault, like, that would have been a big, big deal. And it would have been a career killer. Yeah, they would have sent me back and I would eventually get through. But I went to Fort Riley, Kansas, a mechanized unit, and it wasn't a big deal. But it did put a chip on my shoulder. I had more to prove, you know, not having that piece of cloth on my shoulder. It was evident, you know, so it put me at the bottom of the deck, but I had to work that much harder. That was a setback at the time, but in hindsight, you know, maybe I would have thought I had arrived or wouldn't have worked as hard had I come out with Ranger school. So, you know, turn lemons into lemonade. That's, I think, you know, you just got to work through the setbacks, and it hasn't, in, you know, hindered my career at all. Thank goodness. But I have always felt like I got a chip on my shoulder, to work past that, work through that.
Yeah. So as you know, you mentioned the word progression, you know, as you progress in the military, tell me a little bit about that. I mean, did you just kind of go with the flow? Like, here's what I'm doing next. Or did you say like, hey, here are the things I want to do and begin to work toward those to try to move up in rank and try to move into different unit things that you wanted to do?
Yeah. So I definitely knew I wanted to go Special Forces. So as soon as I was eligible to do that, I put in the packet, got accepted, and went and did the pipeline and went, you know, straight through, thank goodness. So before I had even graduated, I got information on, hey, what's the next unit that's going to deploy? And so I went to that company headquarters and talked to the major that was there, that was in charge of that company, and was like, hey, I want to come to this company. I want to go to Afghanistan with your unit. You know, so you got to be proactive. You know, whatever the next goal you have is in front of you, whatever the next target, whatever the next opponent, you know, it's like scouting. You gotta scout out your life. You gotta set all the benchmarks in place and make it happen. So I did that, and I got the company that I wanted. And we went to Afghanistan, and we got the hottest fire base, you know, where the most conflict was going to be. You know, it was a tough deployment. You know, we lost two guys and we had several guys injured, able to make full recoveries. But yeah, you know, just if there's as a special forces guy, as any service member, you know, you should always think, hey, there's a sound of gunfire. I want to run towards it. I want to lead. I need to take out the enemy, eliminate the threat. That was my mindset. Yeah. And then, you know, academically, professionally, whatever, when I went to the Command and General Staff College as a major, I wanted to, I want to make the commandant's list. And that was a sacrifice. You know, a lot of guys use that year stateside, you know, not deploying, not in charge of anyone else but yourself, to take a knee and recharge the batteries. Or, you know, I'm blessed. My wife is loving and caring and understanding. My kids were young, and hopefully they'll forgive me. But, you know, on the other hand, I thought, hey, this is my year for academics. The Army wouldn't send me here for a year and not get any work out of me if they didn't think it was important. So I want to go learn everything I can, and I owe it to my future subordinates, my peers, my future bosses, to come back as well educated as possible and get as much out of that year.
Whenever you were in Afghanistan, you know, you said, you know, you want to be able to run, you know, run toward the fire, right? Not run away from it. You know, sometimes in athletics, you see kids that just seem fearless for some reason. And then you see others that aren't. And sometimes they become, right? And I mean, we've had kids that walked into our program and sometimes they couldn't even wrestle, or sometimes they could wrestle a little bit, but mentally, you know, they weren't where they needed to be. And then it's like, suddenly you just see like a switch that gets flipped. But in your experience, and we're talking about the safety of the wrestling mat or the safety of the football field, right? Not life and death, thankfully. I know a lot of times in sports, you know, we have hey, let's have this warrior mentality, which I think is great. But at the end of the day, it's a sport. As you experience, you know, being in actual combat, do you think it's nature versus nurture? I mean, do some people just have that more, like they're willing to run toward the fire? Or is it something that definitely comes from your training, or a little bit of both?
There's a few factors. You know, I'd say I'll back up a little bit. Even with kids, so I help coach my boys' baseball teams, and I used to coach their football and get involved in it. And I always tell them, like, hey, end of the day, I'm always going to love you. You know, no one's shooting at you. You're not going to die. Probably won't break any bones. Like, just go out there, give it your all, be fearless. In combat, so we had an Air Force Special Operations guy, a combat controller, attached to us. I think your buddy was a PJ,
mm-hmm.
But same community. And the combat controller, he was a devout Mormon, you know, fearless. And, you know, I'm a believer too. And so the guys that are believers, they have eternal security. And so they're able to be fearless because they know they, if they do get shot, they get blown up, whatever, they know where they're going. The other guys, I would say it's the training. You know, you trust the training you've received. You trust the training and the discipline of the guys to your right and left to cover you. You know, they're going to be laying down suppressive fire while you bound forward. They're going to be, you know, they're going to do what they're supposed to do. So it's trust. You know, in wrestling, it's a team sport, but it's individual matches, you know. But I would say maybe a parallel to football, like, You got to block the guy in front of you. You got to run that gap that you're assigned. You got to do whatever. So just trust the people to your right and left, and from training. So hard practice is, you know, practice, yeah, like you're going to fight. And practice is always harder. It should be harder than your hardest match. You know, we've had training that is insanely difficult and hard, and the standards are high. And I would say Ranger School and the Q Course pipeline is harder. An average day of training is harder than 99% of the days in combat. And I'd imagine that's probably the same for the wrestling room. Like, you're going at it for hours and hours on end, but your matches are 9 minutes, you know, max. Yeah. So you just got to train hard and be ready for what's in front of you.
Yeah, absolutely. So real fast, you know, whenever you guys are over there and you're in combat, what's your day-to-day look like? You know, you're in Afghanistan. What's a kind of a day-to-day?
Yeah. So I did two 9-month rotations as a detachment commander and 18, you know, like the eight, Mr. T, 18 as an ODA commander. So it's intelligence drives operations, and then you got to refit afterwards. So about the fastest you can do is a 3-day cycle. You know, you'll do a prep day, create the order, you know, brief your team, go through rehearsals. And then we're, as Special Forces, we're training partners. That's our primary mission as a combat multiplier. You're trying to get someone else, you're a 12-man team, and you're trying to get the indigenous forces to go with you. And so like a teacher or a coach, or like the teachers or coaches of the Army. So then you got to train, you got to tell them what the mission is. You got to get them trained up and prepared as well. And then you have your execution day or days or weeks or however long that mission takes. And then at the end, you come back and you got to, you know, replace all the tires because they probably got shot out. You got to refit the ammo cans and, you know, restock all your ammo and reload the grenade launchers and the belt-fed machine guns and clean your weapons out because it's dusty. You got to restock your meals and water. You got to prep everything. You got to charge batteries for your radios. You got to replace the batteries for your night vision and the, and your optics and your lasers. So, that's pretty much the cycle, but, you know, that's a cycle. We did a few 3-day cycles. Usually prep takes a couple days. The mission will take, you know, 2 to 5 days, and the refit will take a couple days, and you might be waiting on a helicopter to, or a aircraft to drop stuff off. And you want to get out on as many missions as possible and keep your enemy on their heels, probably like wrestling. You know, you want to be the aggressor. Don't sit back and let them attack you first. So there's a lot of parallels.
Also thinking, you know, once you're in that situation, once you're in those environments, and then you come back and then you move into other jobs and things like that. But it's kind of made me think, like, as a college athlete, I remember, like, I thought, okay, when I'm done competing, like, I'll go right into coaching, but like, I'm still going to have all the same motivations. I'm still going to have, and I just remember like being finished competing. And then I would say for probably about 6 months, like, I would sometimes wake up in like a cold sweat, just knowing that like my career is over. I've wrestled almost my entire life since I could walk, and like, it's over. I get to go coach. And now eventually that passion that I had for wrestling and competing went over into coaching, right? And that's never left, thankfully. I still have that. But it took me a while to make that mental adjustment. And it took me more than 6 months, but to make that mental. So how do you go from being soldier and then coming back stateside or whatever? And I know that that's an issue with a lot of people, but how do you come back to normal life and make that adjustment?
That's a good question. You know, outside of the days when my buddies have been killed or wounded in action, the two worst days, like professionally, was the day I found out I wasn't going to be a platoon leader anymore, and I had to be company executive officer. You know, as a lieutenant, you want to be a platoon leader. And then the worst day was the last day as a detachment commander, and you know you're going to go be on staff. You know, there's other opportunities to command in your lifetime as a company commander, or battalion commander, brigade, or special forces group, and whatever. But you're no longer a tactical guy. So I had put in a packet to go, you know, Delta Force. There's special mission units. There's two of them. But by that point, you know, I had two kids, maybe three. And what resonated with me once, I think my wife showed my daughter, who was probably 3 or 4 at the time, a picture of me in Afghanistan. And I had a stocking cap and sunglasses and a beard. So I looked different than what she was used to, but Leslie was like, "Hey, Trinity, there's your daddy." And Trinity said, "Who's daddy?" You know, she didn't recognize me. So, you know, in terms of priorities, like, that my time came up, you just got to deal with it. But then it's time to focus on being a husband and a father, you know, being a better son, you know, like, cause when you're responsible for people's lives, yeah, that needs to take priority, honestly, over almost everything else. I still read my Bible every day, but, you know, next to that, you know, keeping my guy, defeating the enemy is your mission, defeating the enemy, and then trying to, you know, protect your guys. So yeah, that was hard. You know, reason why I didn't do the Delta or even go to the selection. I'd been approved to go to the trial, but I didn't go is, you know, talk to buddies that were over there, we say behind the fence, and, no, it's probably one of my decisions I second guess the most in my career, and I regret not having given it a shot. but I'm sure my kids will appreciate it. You know, they've just been more years away, kind of present but estranged. So, you know, since I made that decision, I'm trying to make the most of the time I have with them. But yeah, I 100%, the sweats, you miss it. You miss it every day. It's kind of like office space. You wake up every day and it's worse than the day before. You know, it's not that bad, but you gotta find a new purpose in life. And whether that's, you know, developing your subordinates now and preparing them as best as possible, or, you know, studying military history and operations and being the best planner you can possibly be, whatever it is, you know, be the best coach, be the best program guy, be the best teacher, be the best husband and father, best, you know, be a better son than you were when you couldn't dedicate that time to it.
Yeah, absolutely. So what is, you know, I know that like anything else in life, there's highs, lows, there's good and bad times, you know, just off the top of your head, what's maybe one of the best memories that you have being in the military, whether it was being overseas or something in training or whatever, something that just, when you think about it, like, you're like, oh, and I know relationships are big and everything in life too, but what's something off the top of your head that was just like one of the best times?
It's probably not the best, but it was random, like a happy surprise. I landed in Iraq, I think 4th of July, 2008. And I was just, we weren't out at our base yet, but I was just kind of walking from one place on a giant FOB at BIOP, Baghdad International Airport, which is like the biggest base in Iraq. And I just passed by this guy, and it was a guy I did ROTC with in college. Mm-hmm. And now he just lives a couple miles away, and we see each other occasionally. So, you know, that's just neat. You know, seeing people you have crossed paths with before is good in the Army. You know, you might bounce around different bases, and then all of a sudden you cross paths again. And that's always good to reconnect with those guys. Seeing the successes of your subordinates is, you know, I just had a probably the highest high, I would say, last week. One of my former teammates from that first trip to Afghanistan retired, and he asked me to come down and speak at his retirement at Special Operations Command South down at Homestead Air Force Base south of Miami. So flew down there and participated in that. And that was an honor. You know, I think I said during the speech, you know, like, it's nice as an officer to be able to reenlist the guy, because they have to swear an oath. An officer administers the oath of reenlistment, or, you know, participate in a promotion. But that was the first time I had been asked to speak at a guy's retirement. So that was a huge honor. So just, I would say, seeing the successes of your, you know, subordinates, peers. Yeah. A guy I worked with in Afghanistan, I was a liaison from the special operations element to his conventional command in Afghanistan when he was a colonel promotable. So then he made one star, and now he commands 2nd Infantry Division. And last week or the week before, he was nominated for his third star, and he's going to go back to the Pentagon and be the joint operations director for the joint staff. So he's on a tremendous glide path. And his dad is from the Kansas City area. His dad went to West Point. He went to West Point. So it's neat to see, you know, a superior have success, have subordinates and peers have success. It's great.
Yeah. All right. So, you know, between your athletic career, time, you know, being on the ground, time, you know, in leadership positions and roles, and then you also help coach, you know, currently, you know, you help coach, and then being a dad as well. All those are leadership roles. What are some of the leadership principles that you've learned along the way that you try to implement with your subordinates or implement with your own children or your own athletes? What are some of the things that, you know, because if I look at the big picture, man, the military leadership structures are incredible. And what are some of the things that, but I mean, not just from military either, though, also your athletic days, but what are some of the leadership principles that you've taken that you are able to apply kind of across the board to various areas?
I would say, you know, number one is copy success. So if you see someone else having success, reach out to them, see what they're doing, and then copy it. That's, you know, they say the number one form of flattery is copying or mimicry. And that's just an easy answer. So, and then you try and translate that or make parallels to your profession. And a lot of things do translate if you just make minor tweaks. Another thing I say is there's always someone training harder, working harder, or maybe just more genetically gifted, talented. You know, you have to make up the difference. And the number one difference maker in most cases is work, whether it be academic work, whether it be physical work. You can gain ground that way. And, you know, when guys feel sorry for themselves, I always, you know, someone's always got it worse than you. So don't dwell, don't throw a pity party. Someone has it worse than you. So those are probably my threes. You know, find someone who's got a good system going and copy it. You can always work harder. There's always room. You know, just, you gotta maybe move something else off your plate and put something else on. And then, don't dwell on negatives. Don't throw a pity party. Just work through it.
Yeah. Very good. I mean, in life, it's, you know, it's funny. I mean, and this is human nature, but 100 people could talk to you and 99 people say something good and one person says something negative, and that's what you dwell upon, right? So human nature. Mm-hmm. So you got to get good at being very intentional about not letting that be your focus, you know? And then you said copy success. I love that because success leaves clues. And it's honestly one of the reasons why I love doing this podcast. I get to speak with a lot of highly successful people and they leave clues, right? So we get to follow those clues and then take what we can adjust and put it in our own lives and utilize that as well. So it's really cool to be able to hear that. And I know that's something I did often as an athlete. I mean, my freshman year in college, I walked in and the team I wrestled for, Missouri Valley, had won a national championship the year before, multiple All-Americans on the team, multiple national champions. So I just found a couple of those national champions and I did whatever they did. Whenever we went on team runs, I ran with those guys. When we lifted weights, I lifted weights with them. I was their shadow. When we wrestled, I jumped in the toughest groups, took some whoopings, right, as a freshman. But I wanted to copy their success. I knew that, hey, I want to be an All-American. I want to be a national champion. These guys are doing it. They've been there, done that. So I just want to do whatever they do, you know? And then throughout my life, I think I've been able to try to do that. So it's really cool to hear that. And I think it's a good way. It doesn't mean that, you know, people always say, I don't reinvent the wheel. And a lot of times we don't, but we have to maybe sometimes modify it for our own personalities, our own lifestyles and things like that. So yep. As well. And then hard work, there's no way around it. I've never met a highly successful person who doesn't work hard. It just happens, you know. Doesn't mean they don't work smart, but it's just a big part of it. So absolutely. Well, you know, and we talked off camera a little bit, you know, you played basketball and you played football and those type things, and you weren't a wrestler. And, you know, being 5'10", you know, you probably would have been a stud little wrestler too, you know, had you went that route. So just, because we have a lot of wrestling people that listen to this now, you know, you're getting to coach wrestling, you know, you have a son that just wrestled today. Tell me a little bit about your experiences coaching wrestling or kind of moving into that world a little bit.
Well, I don't coach wrestling. Absolutely not qualified. I trust the system. You know, you had Coach Kill on here. I listened to his interview the other day. Tremendous guy. And it's unfortunately just resigned there after 22 years. He took the program from the ground up, and you know, state champions last year. Tremendous. You know, he's a pillar in the community. And the program, you know, so Clint McAllister is our youth program director here in Mill Valley. Another great guy. His sons are awesome wrestlers, just like Coach Keel's sons. And, you know, just listen to all the guys you've had on here, all the wrestling coaches. It's neat, you know, how much are the same and how much – as our military and wrestling values overlap, and just, you know, personal character too, you know, faith is independent, but all the guys you've had on and all the people that, and they're all successful folks and they all have their baseline in their faith. So that's awesome. Overlap, you know, aggressive, you know, cheering, all the same stuff, you know, they're wrestlers in the military, they're aggressive. They want to win. They train hard. They work hard. They don't let setbacks hold them back. They just keep going and take the next step. It's incredible. And I guess to your audience, I would want to say, I had a coach, Coach Snyder, in football in high school. But all you wrestling coaches, all you teachers are leaders of young people. And I would encourage you, if you know, you're probably under the age of 37 or whatever the requirements are now, if you're interested at all in, you know, joining the National Guard or Reserve, you guys are going to excel. Just the way God made you. And if you're listening to this, you know, you're trying to make yourself better. So, you know, you got your summers not off, because I know you guys are always preparing for the next academic year and next season. But it could definitely, you know, augment your income, but also in your health insurance and whatnot. But you guys are going to have success in the military. I know, Coach Parks, you would have crushed it had you gone the military route. And so would, you know, Coach Keel and all these other guys. So, you know, and you have the option to at least explore National Guard or Reserve if you guys are interested.
Yeah, so my dad was in the Army during Vietnam. And, you know, I really, really considered it in high school and then had an opportunity, you know, to get a wrestling scholarship and go wrestle in college and went that route. But I love the military. I'm passionate about the military. And I've been fortunate to be around a number of high-level military guys in my life. And just I see so many parallels, so many things. And if you look at wrestlers, and I'm biased, of course, right, being a wrestler and being a wrestling coach. But, you know, wrestlers do very well in MMA. Wrestlers do very well in the military. And I think it's because you have to learn to work so hard, and you have to be able to overcome, like you said, setbacks. And so there are a lot of parallels there for sure. But I don't want to forget this. I'm going to go back real quick. So I say you coach wrestling now, like dad coached, right? But I love that you just said, like, I don't coach, I trust the system. So I know nothing about soccer, zero about soccer. We didn't have soccer where I'm from, right? It's small town, Oklahoma, huge football place. No soccer. So my oldest daughter played soccer for a number of years. Now volleyball is her main sport. And she actually says she's coming out to wrestle for my high school team next year on our girls.
Oh, nice.
Team. Yeah. Pretty cool. But, and then both my boys love soccer and play. And my older son, he's 9, but he's on these little traveling teams and they do the soccer stuff. So as a dad, I don't know anything about soccer, and it's probably the best thing in the world. And my wife coaches high school volleyball, but I don't know anything about volleyball. So it's probably one of the best things in the world, right? I'm just a fan. I get to just sit on the side, trust the system, cheer them on. I'm not vocal. I don't do it. I coach enough. I don't want to be coached when I'm out there. And I do coach one of their flag football teams. But so being dad and watching your son wrestle, I guess I say all that because some parents do a great job with it. And then there's some crazy, and I'm talking like youth sports, right? Little kids. There's some parents that just get crazy wild about it. You know, you hear them being wild on the sidelines and yelling all the time, or they make it so serious with their children that by the time the kids are 12, you know, they're 12, 13 years old, they don't want to do the sport anymore. It kind of ruins it for them a little bit. So what are some of the things that you do as a dad of athletes that allows you to sit back and actually just be dad and then be there and support your athlete as well? Because it's not always easy, right? I'm not dogging on the parents to do that. It is not easy.
Yeah. You know, well, now this generation, they're so fortunate with everything on YouTube. There's training drills and, you know, coaching that they can just have, that they have at the touch of their fingertips. I remember having to go to like Blockbuster and try and rent instructional hitting videos, you know, for baseball or whatever it was. So, you know, especially with wrestling and me having zero background, but loving the sport, I tell them, you know, watch, you know, find these videos and I'll sit down and watch them with them and rewind it and say, hey, look at that move. What's that called? Did you learn that? You know, that one, like, you know, try to employ some of these in your next match. You know, so just augment what their coaches are teaching them. And I trust the system fully. They don't let the parents in the room for practice, you know, cause they need the guys undivided attention.
Yeah.
From all the wrestlers. And I think get folks like me not knowing I'd be a distraction, you know, to the kids. Even if I didn't say anything, they'd want to come over and get water or whatever. So, and it's a great, great program. So, you know, trust the system, just let them go their way. If that's the thing too, if you got people on the sideline saying, trying to coach the kids, like, hey, well, you can come out and coach next year, you know, like sign up and do it. I know not in the high school program, but in recreational at the youth levels. Yeah. Like you gotta either let the coaches coach or go do it yourself. And I really love all the coaches we have for the youth wrestling program here at Mill Valley.
Yeah, it's awesome. You know, and I'm fortunate at the high school level. I mean, we have just a great wrestling culture. I have a bunch of really good assistant coaches. We have great parents, actually, you know, have good friendships with a lot of our parents. And so we just have a great program. But sometimes when I go to these youth sporting events, you see some parents that are just getting way too fired up or coaching on the sidelines. You know, we'll be at soccer and you hear a parent who's constantly, I remember last year, my son's out there playing and there was a little kid from the other team. The mom kept yelling his name. And he like kept turning, like literally turning and looking at his mom. And the ball went by him like three times. And his mom was like, go get the ball. And I was like, he can't because you're yelling at him. You know, you keep yelling his name, you know? So it's refreshing to hear, you know, when a dad says like, hey, just trust the program, you know? And eventually, and we talk to our high school athletes about this all the time, it's got to become your journey. It has to. You're the one who goes out and competes. You're the one who practices. You're the one who gets your hand raised. You're the one who gets to keep the medal. We're here to guide you and support you and do everything we can for you, but it's your journey. So it's cool whenever they're younger and they're kids and they start kind of making their own journey and they find their, doesn't mean they don't have guidance and support, right? But sometimes I think people can be too overly involved. And so anyway, so that stood out for me when you said that you trust the system and, you know, let them go in there and just do that. I think it's really cool. And I think that's how it should be. Again, not always easy. We love our kids and we want the best for them, but sometimes it's hard to do. All right. Tell me, and I always kind of like start to wrap up with these questions, but if we were to look at your phone and we were to look at the favorites on your phone, you know, I know your wife's going to be, you know, number one on there, but who are a couple of your favorites that, you know, you need something in life? These are people that you're going to give a call and you know that they would have your back right away.
Yeah, good question. So I told you I got deep roots in the community out there in the Shawnee Heights area in Brereton. My closest four buddies all the way, you know, elementary school through high school, all Brereton guys. So my brother-in-law, Eric Torres, Dustin Denton, Eric Schrader, Travis Alexander, those are my crew. And we, you know, what the big reconnection was during COVID quarantine, actually, we set up a like a WhatsApp and now we're on Signal and we chat every day. I got another good buddy who you might know from Topeka, Andy Vogel. He's Young Life. He was a groomsman at my wedding. I was a groomsman in his wedding. We text back and forth a lot the last couple weeks. I've stayed in touch. And we had dinner with him the night before our daughter was born. And we were kind of going back and forth on names. And he threw out Trinity and we used it. So, I guess, and you bring on old friends from childhood a lot, but that's the people you got the deepest connection with, the longest amount of time. You trusted them. You kind of help raise each other, you know, make all the decisions and shape where you go and they go in their lives. So those are the folks.
Yeah, that's crazy. I know we have a lot of connections out there. And it's funny whenever you start to talk to somebody, like the different connections that we actually have. I had a guy on, Bob Bodine, who's a couple time best-selling author and one of my absolute favorite authors and speakers. And he's just amazing. But, you know, he talks a lot about your who, and these are people in your life that are your go-tos, right? Just like your buddies you were talking about, but how, you know, people say there's like, you know, 6 degrees of separation or whatever, but a lot of times it's actually much closer than that. And so he and I, we did an hour long conversation and we stopped recording. And he just sat down and mentors me for 30, 45 more minutes, which was incredible. But in the midst of that, it comes up that I coach Tanner Gardner, and Tanner is a close friend of his now. Like, they've become really tight. Like, what in the world? Like, what are the odds of that? This guy's like down in Texas, and here he is, this big time author who's like gets brought in by the top corporations in the world to speak. And we both knew Tanner and had no idea we both knew Tanner. You know, I had no idea that, you know, Andy Vogel, and Andy is one of the best people that I've ever met in my life. Yeah, just a great.
He was actually very instrumental in me, you know, becoming a Christian. He was a year behind me in school and went to Care Paravel. But I got tied in with that Topeka Bible Church youth group, and he and I just hit it off. You know, he's a big sports guy and, you know, very personable, and we were like inseparable there for a few years.
Yeah. Andy's an amazing person. So, all right. You can answer one of these or you can answer all three of them and just expound upon it as much as you want, but call it the three H's. So I want you to tell me about a hero, a hardship, and a highlight. Pick one or a little of each. Hero, hardship, highlight.
Okay. I think probably a hero, and I texted you about him, is Willie Lyles. Buddy and I, we were in the same squad in Officer Basic Course way back in 2004. And he was in the Q course behind me. So we graduated and earned our Green Berets about the same time. And then we ended up in the same company and at the same fire base. And he stepped on an IED in 2010. And it was a double amputee above the knees. And, you know, he's a tremendous athlete at BMI. And, you know, when he was wounded, they took him to Tarinkaw. It was like where the bigger base was at with the hospital in Afghanistan. And they exhausted all the entire blood supply there. And people had to go in and, you know, donate blood immediately without it being screened. And he fought and struggled and stayed alive and made a full recovery and is, you know, crushing life now and doing well. And, I think he just stayed alive, you know, for his children and for his family. And, you know, he just like refused to die. He never should have made it. And there's so many other guys like that, like Dan Connaughton, you know, Shawnee Heights graduate, class of 98, was a Navy SEAL, double amputee above the knees, and now he's in the Paralympics. So he's a hero too. Ben Harrow is another guy, same company as me, West Point lacrosse player. And then the next trip to Afghanistan, steps on IED, double amputee above the knee. And these guys never should have made it, but they just refuse to die because they're fighters. But I think the baseline on that, what kept them alive, is just their physical conditioning beforehand. Like, had they not had, you know, the health to get through that, they wouldn't have made it. But the heart, the grit, you know, the drive, the desire to just keep on living. So a lot of heroes. You know, there's being in the military, like, you meet a lot of great folks. So tons of heroes. A hardship, you know, looking back on it now, was small fries, but, you know, never earning the Ranger tab was one. Probably the biggest, honestly, for that point in my life, I think, was getting my acceptance to West Point rescinded and taken away. Like, I thought I was on a great glide path. And maybe, hopefully, some of your wrestlers and some teenagers are out there listening. You know, because at that point in your life's pretty short, you know, 17 years. And if you think you're going to get this scholarship, or you think you're going to win a state championship, or do whatever, and you miss your goal, like, that's a big, big deal. And I think adults might not understand, because we've already worked through hardships before, but that might be the first major one for a kid. So for me, yeah, I thought, hey, my life is on this trajectory, this glide path, which was phenomenal for me. You know, that was exactly what I wanted to do. And then you have to find a backup plan and make something happen. And, you know, for me, and so I had a chip on my shoulder. And then, you know, I'll tell you how I worked through that. The hardship was, you know, 9/11 happened when I was in college, and I had thought about dropping out and just signing up to go. But instead, I doubled down and started taking like 21, 24 hours a semester. And I graduated in 3.5 years instead of 4. So I could get there sooner. But yeah, setbacks happen. It's not the end of the world. You can overcome it, whatever it may be. A high, though, it was a high.
A highlight.
I don't know, but to be determined, I guess. You know, making lieutenant colonel, that's kind of the last big hurdle before you hit 20 years. You know, I was honored to make lieutenant colonel and humbled, and you know, I feel bad for the folks that don't get it. That's kind of like the first, like, big promotion. Like, most guys make second lieutenant to first lieutenant to captain to major, you know, 97% or whatever. A lot of guys make it. But major to lieutenant colonel is like the first big cut. So I'm grateful to have made it. And obviously couldn't have done it without great mentors in the military, great peers that I learned from, and then great subordinates propping me up, you know, the whole way. So.
It's first off, you're very humble, you know, so it's sometimes hard for people to talk about some of the things that they have done. And so, you know, I said, hey, and I do this with a lot of my guests, and I don't give any of you guys my questions ahead of time. Like, I want this to be off the dome. Right. And, but say, hey, you know, send me some of your credentials, you know, just so when I do an introduction. And looking at your credentials, it's amazing. I mean, some of the things that you've done in your life and done in the military is amazing. So you're super humble. Everyone listening, Wes is like super humble. He's done a ton, in his career, which is really cool. And then second, man, I want to say thank you for, you know, all your time spent serving this country, all your time spent in the military serving this country. I know that you are being in the Shawnee Heights community. You're a legend over here in our community. And I know that we're extremely grateful, but nationwide, you know, people got to be grateful for all that you've done and all that, you know, the people in our military are out there doing right now. So I want to tell you that personally, I'm thankful and I'm grateful. And I think it's pretty awesome.
Oh, my pleasure. Yeah. Love it. You know, thanks for having me on. This is, it's funny you say, I think you're the legend in the Shawnee Heights community, you know, everything you're doing there. I can't open Facebook without seeing all the great stuff. You know, you're touching so many lives. Like that is, that's cool. Cause your legacy is going to live on. And even just with this, like, this is something, your kids, your grandkids, your great grandkids are going to go back and be able to get lessons from you and, you know, all the smart people, successful people you're having on your show. It's neat. And I'll get with you offline, but I'm curious to see like what's next for you. What are your goals? But you're doing good stuff. And thanks for having me on. It's been awesome.
Yeah, I appreciate it. So yeah, it's a blessing for me to get to do this podcast and interview a lot of people who are smarter and more successful than I am. And like you said earlier, man, copy success so I can get in and try to steal some of those things. But again, you know, Wes, I appreciate you being on. I appreciate all that you do. And where can people, I don't know how much social media you do. Where can people follow you on social media?
I have Instagram accounts and Twitter, but that's mostly just so I can keep track of my kids. I have a Facebook account. If you're interested in military stuff, yeah, shoot me a message on Facebook. Or, you know, get with Coach Parks here. He's got my email and phone number, but happy to talk to anyone about anything, maybe a book list or, if you're interested in the military for any of the young athletes or a teacher looking, to have a side job. I think any coach or teacher is going to do extremely well in the military, and any wrestler is going to crush it. You already have all the baseline tools, and the Army will teach you everything you need to know, or any branch of the service for that matter. I can put you in contact with friends in other branches of the service, but yeah, happy to help if anyone's interested.
Awesome. And I can't let you go because you just brought it up real quick. So last thing, book list. All right. So yeah. I'm a book nerd. Give me one or two books that like just have impacted you that you love, that you suggest or give out or whatever.
Yeah. So Thinking Fast and Slow is a good one. It talks about System 1 and System 2 thinking. It's written by some psychologist. Reading one now by a former FBI agent. But essentially it's like negotiation. That's an interesting one history wise that I read was 1421, the year China discovered the Americas. I'm a big, like, part of the reason I think I was interested in the military is just the adventure, the exploration. So it talks about these giant Chinese naval fleets that circumnavigated the world in like the 1400s. It's crazy. I listened to a podcast recently called The History of China. Super, super long, but the era that interested me the most was like the Mongol conquest in the 1200s, like reaching all the way to Europe, you know, by horseback. Like that had been so neat. Yeah, I'll have to shoot you the list. I've a few of the schools that I've gone to in the Army have had extensive reading lists. I've read a lot of books. A lot of them will have parallels and some nuggets that you could probably take out. I think Nassim Taleb is a good one, like Black Swan and some of his other, he's a very intelligent guy. He's written several books. Those are interesting as well. A lot of mine are probably geopolitics, but some leadership ones that'll definitely translate to teaching and coaching.
Yeah, well, immediately Thinking Fast and Slow. I've never read that book, so I wrote it down so that I can pick it up. And then
that'd be good. I think you might like that for your wrestling mindset.
Yeah, the FBI one that happened to be Chris Voss. Is that who the book is by? Never Split the Difference. Was the FBI?
Yes. Yeah, I just started that. Yep.
Yes, phenomenal. Yeah, phenomenal book. One of my favorites. So it's a very good book. All right, well, Wes, thank you so much for being on. I appreciate it, man. And you know, for anybody listening, if you are interested in the military, get a hold of Wes, share this with your other friends, and not just the military, those who are interested in leadership, personal growth, and trying to become all they, you know, can become in this world while helping other people as well. So again, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Yeah,
All right, everybody listen. May God bless you, smile upon you, and give you peace. Till next time, we're out.
Hey, I want you to go check out my friends at the Matterborn Wrestling Company. If you wear wrestling shoes for any reason, for me, I lift in these, I train in these, I coach wrestling, I wrestle. All right, so if you're an MMA fighter, a wrestler, weightlifter, and you wear any sort of a wrestling shoe, boxer, these are the ultimate shoes. I've wrestled since I was 4 years old, been around the sport my entire life. And for the last few years, the only thing I've worn are Matterborn wrestling shoes. The comfort is ridiculous. They have a 1 year guarantee. The fit, phenomenal. And then I can't wear them out. I wear these suckers almost every single day. I can't wear them out. So that is Matterborn Wrestling, MATABOURNE Wrestling Company. Go look at any of their social medias. You'll be able to get to their link tree through that. I will also have a link in the show notes. Matterborn Wrestling Company. If you're looking for wrestling shoes, they are the best.
Podcast complete. Now me working overtime. I'm just a vessel for the spirit. When it's in me, then I shine. If the clay gets broken, he makes some whole new pottery. Repent for your sins. Tell Satan to stay up off of me. With a new step. CSL rep. Pop, lock, and rock. Coach P, who never stops.